Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast for Tuesday, November 8th, 2011. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
That's right.
Hi, it's Tuesday and I'm on your, I was going to say radio, but
it's not a radio.
Terribly outdated. I'm on your iPod.
What is this radio you speak of? Grandma, what's a radio?
There's a commercial on the radio that they play, and they name all these things like the Pet Rock and you know, 8-tracks and all these things, and they're like, but one thing hasn't gone out of style, and that's radio. You're like, really? Because give it another 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's like newspaper. Like, invest in newspapers. They're the future.
Yeah.
Oh, my. So it's nice to have Kai back with us on the podcast. You guys are probably getting tired of just hearing my voice rambling on and on and on and on. This is episode 46, by the way, podcast number 46. Of course, we have a bunch of other files like interviews, and we have articles and pirated articles and all kinds of fun stuff at BadQuaker.com. Go on over there. If you're listening to us on iTunes and you've never actually been to BadQuaker.com, go on over to BadQuaker.com and look through the archives. Hit the over on the right side, scroll down a little bit. Hold on while I do that so I know what I'm saying. And you'll see a list of categories, like all podcasts, audio articles, and then there's a whole list of subjects. And click on any one of those that strikes your fancy, and you'll see some articles. And if you just keep scrolling back through them, some of the older stuff that's no longer available on iTunes is right there. And you might find something you really find interesting. There's a lot of... good stuff? No, I don't know about that. There's a lot of stuff, though.
There's a lot of stuff.
It's stuff. It's definitely stuff.
And if you do visit the website, make sure and drop us a note. Tell us you've been there.
Yeah.
You know, let us know.
Yeah.
Let us know, hey, that article was really awful, or, you know, hey, I really liked that one, or...
You guys are stupid. Go away.
Whatever.
We
just like to know you're listening.
Yeah. Sometimes the adding your comments on the bottom of the articles, sometimes that's a little cumbersome because that goofy animal capture thing is a little clumsy, and it's difficult to try to figure out what it is that they're trying to tell. You know, you're looking at this thing and you're like, it's a shark. I wrote shark 6 times. Why is it not accepting it? But just hit the reload or refresh button. And try again, and, you know, eventually you'll figure it out and get through there. It's very cumbersome. It took me forever to get the right combination so that I could use it.
Right.
But someday maybe we'll upgrade to something better. Anyway.
We chose that one because we thought it would be easier than the Word ones. Because the Word ones, you always run into issues with those.
Yeah.
Because they're like, I don't know what that letter is. They're all squished together and in a weird font. And
is that two N's or is that an M? Is it cursive or is it? Oh, don't get me started on cursive writing. I will go off on that. Okay, so anyway, one of the things that we did want to talk about today, and I hope this holds some level of interest to some of the listeners.
And if it doesn't, let us know. We don't know if we're boring you.
We'll just mock you and go ahead talking about it anyway. No, not really. Well, maybe.
Read your email on the podcast and laugh. It's fun.
So, some time back, Kai has been wandering in and out of the whole paleo diet type thing. And she has adjusted things to fit her lifestyle a little bit better. She doesn't do the pure paleo thing. And I had talked about giving it a try, and I went 3 weeks without really eating any grains of any significance. Definitely no wheat during that time frame. I think I might have had a corn chip or something now and then, or some other corn product of some kind. But definitely no soybeans, no wheat, no oats, no rapeseed or as we call it,
canola.
Canola, Canadian oil. Canola, yeah, Canadian Oil Association.
Maybe.
I can't remember now. Anyway, so I avoided that stuff for about 3 weeks, and I was feeling really good. I was actually able to get into some light jogging with the dog when I was walking the dog instead of just walking and being in pain all the time. And then I had to go back to Missouri with the ongoing family problems, the health issues that my wife's mother is having. And being there, being traveling on the road, being in other people's homes, and, you know, not really being able to control your diet right. and control your...
You just don't want to be that kind of person who's like,
yeah,
you know,
I don't eat that. I totally don't eat that.
Don't you have anything without gluten?
Yeah.
Like, what am I, a vegan? No, I'm not going to be a jerk like that.
I don't want to eat that. That's been in the kitchen with gluten.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah,
so
this is I like to be healthy eating. It's not a religion.
Yeah. 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 And it's not worth, whether or not I have some aches and pains is not worth being a jerk with family members. So, so anyway, so I did what I could, but I still ended up eating at restaurants and eating what they were serving and so forth. And I ended up, consuming massive amounts of gravy and biscuits, you know, like 47 biscuits an hour or something like that. Seems like it anyway, but
just 5 gallon buckets full of gravy. And
yeah,
a ladle.
Yeah, and just slurp it down. It wasn't quite that bad. We're exaggerating, just joking. But anyway, so I'm back to being creaky and sore and hurting and arg. So maybe in the little blink of time that I'm going to be back home, maybe I can get my diet straightened back out and get some of my joints working again.
Yeah, I had two things that kind of threw me off, because I've been mostly focusing on the gluten and the soy. Like, those were my big, and industrial seed oils.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those were my big main focuses.
Not vegetable oils.
Not vegetable oils.
They lie. They call it vegetable
yeah,
oil.
It's not.
When
they're
say,
not pressing carrots for their oil,
yeah.
you know.
When they say vegetable oil, what they mean is vegetation oil.
Yes. What they mean is grain seed oil that has been chemically altered and processed.
To keep it from poisoning and killing you immediately.
Yes.
You know, I'm surprised they don't use castor oil like that. Castor beans are where you get ricin, the poison
mm-hmm.
ricin. I'm surprised they don't process castor oil and sell it to us as food.
Mm-hmm.
So I just interrupted you. So over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Well, it started. I'm participating in NaNoWriMo, which is the National Novel Writing Month,
mm-hmm.
and which is I've been mostly sitting at the computer typing and consuming things like chips and cookies and crackers and things. And then I had my 1 year anniversary with my husband on Saturday, and we went out for, you know, a whole weekend restaurant binge fest, and and so I woke up this morning and I was just like, oh, I feel awful. I had a heartburn that was just like engulfing my entire body, and because I'm not, you know, it wheat gluten affects your joints, but it affects my digestive system.
Mm.
Like, it's bad. Do not approve.
Yeah. Well, this leads us to something we talked about the last time we had a podcast together, which was forever ago. When was that?
2 weeks?
Yeah, let's see.
Because I don't think we had one last week.
Going all the way back to October 26th. So in that podcast, that was Eating Healthy and Spiders from Mars. In that podcast, we had talked about,
Michael Schmidt?
Michael Schmidt, yes. Michael Schmidt was the gentleman in Canada who was protesting the draconian milk laws
mm-hmm.
and decided to go on a hunger strike. He was still consuming water and lemon juice to try to, you know, keep himself hydrated. And his point, he wanted to see the was it premiere? Is that what the person's title is?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me get over there. You probably hear that noisy mouse click, click, click. Yeah, okay.
Nobody sees the premiere. Not nobody, not no how. Was that our first Wizard of Oz reference for the podcast?
Let's see. It might be.
I don't know how we managed to make it that long without one.
It could be. We do a lot of Wizard of Oz references around the Mad Quaker compound. That's yes, but anyway, that and actually they have that in Canada. If you go to the capital of Canada, which I think is Canada, you know, from I went to public school in the U.S., so I know everything about Canada.
Right.
For example, it's frozen year round.
Right.
It's just a big ice sheet.
Mounties riding horses.
Yes.
Untying women from train tracks.
Yeah, that happens all the time
because they have evil people in. All black with big handlebar mustaches.
And top hats.
And top hats, yes. Yeah. They go around tying people to railroad tracks.
Yes, that's what happens in Canada. Mm-hmm. And in Canada, in their capital of Canada, mm-hmm. they have this big castle-like structure with a big, giant, oversized door. Mm-hmm. And a little man opens the door and says, "Nobody sees the premiere. No way, no how." Mm-hmm. And we just lost all our Canadian listeners.
We're kidding, Canada. We love you.
Oh, and hockey and beer.
Right.
They go around playing hockey and drinking beer all the time.
Right.
And saying...
a boot.
Yeah.
A boot.
And this is what you learn from American public schools. So anyway, this... now getting back to... Let's see. Who else can we insult? Let's talk about Mexico. Nothing like insulting your neighbors.
But, you know, we don't judge people based on imaginary lines drawn on a map by, armed thugs.
Uh-huh. By tax eaters who probably never visited that line on the map. Mm-hmm. People who have never seen the border between Canada and the U.S. or never seen the border between the U.S. and Mexico go out and draw lines on a map, and then they say, "Oh, we got to put soldiers there and shoot people who try to cross it because we drew a line on a map."
Yeah,
you drew that line right through the middle of a culture that's much older than the United States. Mm-hmm. Shut up and go away.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to Mr. Michael
Schmidt.
Michael Schmidt. Michael Schmidt has called off, this is according to, foodsafetynews.com, foodsafetynews.com.
They seem to be the ones who are covering this story the most.
Yeah, I didn't see anything on any of the mainstream over it, which in a way, that might be good, because this, to me, this story is an utter failure.
Yeah.
Bad choice of words.
That's better with two T's.
So anyway, according to foodsafetynews.com, Canadian raw milk dairy farmer Michael Schmidt has called off his five-week hunger strike. Okay, hold on. I have fasted longer than 5 weeks before.
Yeah.
You know, that is, shut up.
Yeah.
And I wasn't drinking lemon juice.
And I'm not... He says he lost 50 pounds.
Mm.
That's a lot of weight to lose in 5 weeks by fasting.
Yeah, I didn't lose that kind of... When I was doing a lot of fasting, I only weighed about 175, 180 at the time, and I would lose very little weight.
Yeah.
I guess 5 or 10 pounds that you lose from you know, the basic...
The hydration.
Yeah, well, and you lose the solids that are mm-hmm. in your system, which can be 5-7 pounds. Mm-hmm. But 50 pounds?
Yeah.
Not in 5 weeks. Not unless this guy was jogging marathons at the same time, you know. Anyway, so let me read their little thing here. Canadian raw milk dairy farmer Michael Schmidt has called off his five-week hunger strike after having had the chance on November 4th to meet the Ontario Premier, Dalton McGentry? Sorry, Dalton, if I'm messing up your name, but you're just another stinking tax eater anyway, so I don't care if I get your name right or not. Anyway, so, and then it goes on to say that Schmidt had earlier vowed to, quote, go until death, unquote, if the premier didn't agree to meet with him in person to discuss raw milk issues and what he described as responsible responsible food freedom. Asking the government for freedom.
That gets me all the time. You know, a lot of people who have things, you know, their particular pet cause, mm-hmm. you know, gun rights or marijuana prohibition.
That's a classic example.
You know, anything like this, they want it to be legal.
Mm-hmm. They want the government to give them permission.
Right. I see this all the time, especially from people in the marijuana prohibition movement, mm-hmm. is, you know, legalize it, tax it. You know, stop it. What are you talking about? Like, no, bad. You want to roll up a newspaper and hit him on the nose.
Bad slave. Bad.
Bad. Bad hippie.
If you have to ask your master for permission to do something, you're a slave.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah. Then you don't have freedom.
No.
Because if your freedom...
Even if your master gives you the opportunity to do that and decides not to beat you or jail you or whatever...
You still don't have freedom.
You're just a slave with permission to behave in a certain way. That's not rights. That's not freedom.
No.
That's not liberty.
No.
In the Fed, they go down, they march in the Fed, in the Fed. How about if you in the Fed? You. How do you do that? Stop trading in Federal Reserve notes unless you have to.
Yeah.
Start trading in other things. Start bartering. Start using other money sources. It's called the black market. Mm-hmm. It works. It always has worked. It always will work.
And that is traditionally how governments fall without a new government taking their place.
Right.
Is, you know, you want to have a revolution. You want to have a rebellion. Great. Do it. But don't do it with violence.
Yeah.
Do it by just removing the
support.
Government has been called the greatest con ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. Mm-hmm. You know, and these people who are in the government are con artists.
Well, I wouldn't call them artists.
Well, but they're con men.
Yeah.
And that stands for confidence.
You're a sexist. There are women cons, too.
Con women. But it stands for confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that you can have a con take, you know, a successful one, is you have to have the person that you're conning have confidence in you.
Right.
And if they don't...
It won't work.
It won't work.
You can't be conned if there's no confidence in the person doing the conning.
Right. So, you know, if you take that away, if you say, you know, I'm just not going to support that anymore, then it goes away.
Yeah.
Because it's all imaginary anyway.
Yep. I was talking about in a couple of previous different podcasts, I've talked about the Shire Silvers, and they're not a sponsor or anything.
Right.
We don't get any money from Shire Silver. But their thing of where they shave, and they weigh it all, and they're very careful, but they shave off a little piece of gold off of a gold bar, and they weigh it very carefully, and then they laminate it between two pieces of plastic, and they put their certification that they have weighed it and how much it weighs. And then you can trade that. Because that's money. That's commodity money. The article yesterday the podcast I did yesterday on the road, actually as we were driving down the highway, was specifically on commodity money. And when you do that, it is commodity money.
Mm-hmm.
And literally we could take something, and Shire Silver has instructions on how to make your own. How to make your own commodity money, laminate it between two pieces of plastic, be honest.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to put your name on it, that's your reputation.
Mm-hmm.
You should have some honor.
Right.
And people will trust you if you build up a reputation to do that kind of thing. So you take, you know, or some silver. You can do the same thing with silver and a good set of weights. And you make your own money. And you can literally trade real commodity money today outside of the Federal Reserve without relying on the government to allow us money freedom by giving us the permission to trade in real money, in real commodity money rather than their fiat bank notes that they use, their Federal Reserve notes. Anyway, and that's my problem with this Michael Schmidt. His whole hunger strike was for the purpose of getting to talk to this premier, mm-hmm. his hero. Now, he might tell you, he's not a hero to me. Yes, if you're looking at him for your deliverance, mm-hmm. if you're looking at him for your salvation, mm-hmm. he's not only your hero, he's your God.
Yeah.
I mean, it's according to how far you want to take this. Is he not your hero? Do you not depend on him? Is he your master? Would you rather me call it master, or would you prefer hero, or would you prefer God or Savior?
Right.
You know, what terminology do you want to lift these people
because
up to?
Because ultimately, you know, he hasn't accomplished anything.
No, not a thing.
And, you know, he could honestly change the premier's mind mm-hmm. and really make the premier go, you know what? You should be able to drink raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
He's got no power.
Right.
And this is an issue that we face across the board is people, they have these heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have these, if only we can get our man in office. And what they don't realize is this is a huge, giant bureaucratic machine designed to not have any change happen.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who you put in charge.
Mm-hmm. It can live longer than their political career.
Yeah, and it has so many things in place,
mm-hmm.
so many hurdles to mm-hmm. keep them
yeah.
from actually affecting any change.
You know, we say all the time here at badquaker.com, we say all the time, do not fight the state using aggression.
Mm-hmm.
Do not fight the state by attacking property.
Mm-hmm.
Do not fight the state by attacking the servants of the state. So, for instance, let's say police. Police are not the problem.
Right.
Police brutality is not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Police aggression, police, all the bad things that you may think of when you think of things that police might do, that's not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the state that employs the police, not the employees.
Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with corporations. You know, they are, it's not the corporations that you have to try to fight.
Mm-hmm. It's the violence of the state that supports the corporation.
Right.
It's the state that gives corporations the ability to have virtual monopolies mm-hmm. in fields and push out competition and makes corporations the giant monsters that they are who in turn go back and support the state.
Right.
It's a symbiotic relationship between the state and the corporations.
Right.
So to mark the corporations as evil, it's kind of like, it's missing the point. It's striking at the branches instead of the root. It's being mad at the puppets instead of the puppet master.
Right.
Or any other 500 other examples we could give of
right.
the same thing. But we've said oftentimes that to use violence against the state or to use violence against representatives of the state only strengthens the state.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you're doing is you're using the weapons of the state on the battlefield that the state chooses, and that's not smart.
Right.
Using the methods and that the state chooses.
You know, you've only had, what, 20, 25 years to think
30,
of ways?
50, even an old person who's, even an old person who's like 60, 65, mm-hmm. 70, 80 years old. Let's say for 80 years you've been planning this and you figured out how the best way to attack the state is. The state is thousands of years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's much, as stupid as the state is, it's much smarter than you
mm-hmm.
or me or any one person.
Yep.
So to fight the state using its own tools.
Because the state, as much as it hates it,
mm-hmm.
it has the benefit of using the market.
Yeah, it has to.
Because it has the market of people making it more evil and more
mm-hmm.
dominating and more, you know, all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it is the market turned evil.
Yeah.
You know.
So now, if fighting the state using violence won't work, because we have spent, how much time establishing that fighting the state using violence won't work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're using the voting process,
yep.
the voting process is based on violence. The voting process is based on a majority of the people inflicting their will upon the minority of the people.
Yep.
So the voting process itself violates the zero aggression principle. Voting itself is an act of violence.
Yep.
Because whatever the majority votes for will be inflicted upon the minority through the use of the gun, ultimately through violence.
Yep.
So if you think you can fix the state by using the state, as goofy as it sounds to attack the state with violence, considering that the state has a monopoly on violence,
mm-hmm.
to try to attack the state using the mechanisms of the state, the political means. Franz Oppenheimer talked about the political means, which is, you know, tax eating, mm-hmm. tax consuming, the consumers of goods and the producers of goods. The producers of goods are those of us out here who work real jobs and make things and do things and provide services and provide products, mm-hmm. whereas the political means, the tax eaters, are those people who only consume. They don't actually produce anything.
Right.
Well, if you go and you decide that you're going to use the political means to change the political means,
right,
isn't that just as stupid as attacking the government using violence to try to counter their violence?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. You can't fix the state by becoming part of the state.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, this person has a horrible disease, right? So I'm going to give myself this disease so that I can cure their disease.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with that. If you're going to the premier of your country or the president or, you know, oh, we'll fix everything. That we have a problem with prominent professor of a university who happens to be African American, and he has a problem with a cop who happens to have a problem with African Americans, and they're in turning violent in the guy's front yard,
mm-hmm.
over nothing that shouldn't have ever even been an issue.
Right.
And so we have two people in conflict, and what are we going to do? We're going to run to the president and have a beer, and now everything's settled. There's no more racism in America.
There's no police brutality. It's
all settled. Our president God fixed everything. Mm-hmm. Our hero. We're so happy. We had a beer together.
Yeah. Meanwhile, nothing changes.
Nothing changes. And that's the way in this situation with Michael Schmidt.
Mm-hmm.
And he got to see his person and, you know, his master. And he got to present his case to his master.
Mm-hmm.
In what I think they called a brief exchange. Here's a quote. The premier came down, we exchanged our positions, we got direction, and parted with a better understanding of where we are coming from. Well, doesn't that sound like that just solved the problem?
Right.
Ugh.
I'm sure there will be no more raids on farmers or, you know, I'm sure everything will be sunshine and rainbows and lollipops.
Yeah, they're not gonna, you know, oh man.
It's not, you know, there were a lot of people when Obama got elected who were all, Obama's the devil and he's going to ruin everything. And mm-hmm. then there were a lot of people who were like, Obama's our savior. He's mm-hmm. going to fix everything. And
both,
you know,
it's the same logical fallacy.
Yeah. And as it turns out, much like every other president,
mm-hmm.
he pretty much did nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, laws got passed or mm-hmm. whatever, and he really didn't have anything to do with it, and nothing changed.
Well, the funny thing is, if you listen to Republicans right now, you get the story that the world is falling apart because of the horrible things Obama has done.
Right.
And it's all happened since 2008.
Right.
Evidently, according to these same Republicans, in 2007, all the way up through 2008, there was just fountains of wealth everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was happy, and there was peace around the world, and we weren't, like, slaughtering people in various poor countries that mm-hmm. have no ability to fight back. None of that was happening, and then Obama came in, and the whole world's falling apart now,
mm-hmm.
because this devil is doing all these horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
But then you talk to a hardcore Democrat or a hardcore leftist, and you say, what's going on? Well, Obama can't get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
Obama's not able to do anything. They keep his hands tied. They stop him at everything. He's not able to accomplish anything. And yet they're looking at the same newscasts. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the truth. The government is going to do what it's always done. It's going to continue to do it. It's moving us towards socialism, whether it's George W. Bush doing it as fast as he possibly could, or whether it's Obama doing it as fast as he possibly can, or whether you take the presidents out of the mix altogether and you just look to the other goons in government. Going back from the day that the United States government was formed, it has been moving towards tyranny. Mm-hmm. And it has not slowed down or backed up one bit.
Nope.
That was, you know, they talk about manifest destiny, mm-hmm. you know, and without really breaking this down and showing the fallacies involved and everything, because in its essence, manifest destiny is making a god out of the United States government. Mm-hmm. That's what manifest destiny does. Mm-hmm. If you believe in manifest destiny, I'm sorry, you worship an idol, and that idol is based in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. You're taking the Christian God, and you're killing him, and you're propping up this picture of Washington, D.C. as your god.
It's so funny to me when these, you know, they say things like, oh, we have to get religion back into politics. You know, you hear that a lot from the hardcore.
But politics is made of religion.
But go to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. and look around.
Yeah.
You know, they don't make giant statues mm-hmm. of people who are not being worshipped.
Yeah. Yeah. Take a look at Lincoln Memorial. Mm-hmm. Holy moly, if that's not a temple, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
What show me a temple someplace that
if you were to pluck an ancient mm-hmm. you know, Athenian
yeah.
and drop him there
yeah.
and say, where do you think we worship?
Yeah.
They would point to that.
A Roman would recognize it right off because mm-hmm. he's got the fascists on each side of his throne. Mm-hmm. He's seated on a throne. He's there in a Zeus-like position or mm-hmm. Or Saturn, not Saturn, a Jupiter. Mm-hmm. He's seated as Jupiter. He's got fascists on each side of him. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't mean Nazis, folks. Come on, buy a dictionary, or at least, you know, it doesn't even cost money. It's on Which the I'm internet for yet. Free. Fascists are the bundles. In Rome, it was a symbolic thing. They would take a bundle of individual reeds, mm-hmm. and they would put an axe head in the reeds, and they would wrap the reeds together. And the idea was that the individual reeds have no strength, but together the reeds can hold an axe, and now all of a sudden it's strong. Now, the reason they had that, oddly enough, is because Rome was a slave state to the Etruscans. Mm-hmm. And so they were not allowed weapons. Mm-hmm. They were a disarmed citizenry. Mm-hmm. And so they weren't allowed weapons. So not allowing them to have weapons, and what they did instead, they were allowed reeds. So they could bundle the reeds together and make a weapon out of
right.
it. So then that became a symbol of strength, that if we all stick together, this idea of the state, we can become a state and we can defeat the Etruscans. And what they ended up doing was, oh, guess what? They made a state that was worse than the Etruscans could ever imagine.
Yep.
That's fascism. That's what the word fascist came from, was that bundle of reeds with an axe head in it. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the altar of Lincoln, in his big Lincoln temple mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C., he's seated on his throne of glory, and on each side underneath his hands are Roman fascists. Mm-hmm. It's not a mistake.
Yeah.
They knew what they were doing. The people who did this knew exactly what they were doing.
You know, I don't believe in this whole idea. You know, there are a lot of conspiracy theorists that say, you know, look, you can see the Masons or whatever.
Yeah, there. Yeah, whoever the evil person, the New World Order or you know, the Illuminati. Or
they draw all of these things and this symbol and that uh-huh. symbol shows up here. And, you know, they put a map over Washington, D.C. and they draw out all the... I don't think all of it was intentional. Mm-hmm. I think that people who are in positions of power look to other positions of power for their symbology, because humans need symbology.
Right.
You know, they need symbolism. They need this something to look at.
They need to make sense out of random things.
Right.
Or even things that are not random, they will, their minds will attempt to make sense out of them and jump to conclusions no matter what.
Right.
We've talked about that before with how your mind will force you. You look at a cloud, and your mind forces you to see a butterfly or a, you know, a space alien or a
you
whatever.
You have those images where, you know, it's an old lady, it's a young lady, it's two people kissing, it's a cup. And, you know, a lot of times you'll look at it and you'll see one thing. And people will say, oh, it's something else. And you can't see it. All you can see, you know, you can only see the cup. You can't see the two faces.
Right.
And then you have somebody point it out, and suddenly that's all you can see.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it becomes difficult to pop back and forth between them. But that is because the human mind constantly looks for patterns and looks to try to determine, you know, it's somewhere deep within our brain.
Yep.
And that does cause a lot of conspiracy theory stuff. I saw one thing on YouTube that I just sat and shook my head. This person who posted this on YouTube says, Obama accidentally let slip about the lizard people.
I am so tired of the lizard people. I am so tired of the reptilians.
So supposedly, if you read the notes and everything, he accidentally let it slip that the reptilian people or whatever are real, because, and that he's one of them, because he was on The View, you know, with The View, and so then you watch the thing, and Obama's talking along, and he says it's the reptilian brain, you know, that causes you to do whatever it was he was talking about. All right, now what he's talking about is you actually have a part of your brain
that they call the reptile brain, the lizard brain.
It's the part that attaches most directly to your spinal column.
Right, the hypothalamus or the thalamus or something like that?
I can't remember. But it's the part it's the part of your brain that if somebody, like, swipes their hand past your eyes really quick and you blink, you blink because that part of your brain reacts super fast.
Right. It's like a mini little compact brain.
Yeah. And the reason they call it a reptilian brain is because it very, very, very closely resembles the brain of a reptile. It's very simple. It does really, really simple jobs like making you blink or making you dodge your head. And that simple part of the brain is what a lot of educated people know about. And you may hate Obama, or you may love Obama, or whatever, but he did actually go to school and he knows a couple things. And the fact that the person on YouTube doesn't know that doesn't mean that there's this grand conspiracy of these aliens or reptilians and they're controlling the world.
Yeah, part of my novel that I'm writing this month, I'm referencing ancient religions from the Middle East. And
Are we self-promoting?
Yes. Yes, I am, actually.
Is this a paid commercial?
But I've been looking, you know, information up about these ancient religions, and apparently they're all owned by the lizard people now. Because you pretty much can't find information on them without these, they're lizard people, and this is a lizard people conspiracy, and and Babylon was a lizard person city.
Well, you know, again, it's because people, they deep down inside, they need to attribute things to something that they can make sense of. And so once they get the image in their mind of something, of this conspiracy or that conspiracy or this, you know, then they look at everything through that light. And they don't see that there's a much bigger picture. I'm not saying that there is not an evil conspiracy hiding what really happened on 9/11 or what really happened with JFK or what really happened with, you know, Martin Luther King. I'm not saying that conspiracies don't exist. Certainly, conspiracies exist.
Right. We know, you know, the Tzatziki experiments were a conspiracy. The, you know, all across the board, there have been conspiracies.
Yeah.
There have been conspiracies that people admit to and, mm-hmm. and are out in the open, and we know about them.
The fall of Russia mm-hmm. and the murder of the Tsar and his family, all that was from a conspiracy.
Right.
The assassination of Archduke Ferdinand was a conspiracy. These things, conspiracies are real. Conspiracies happen. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, whether or not you can link them all together and say this is all one grand conspiracy,
right.
It's a good possibility you're just looking at one image in the picture and not seeing the other.
Right.
Yeah, and yes, it is all linked together. It's all the state.
Right.
It's all the evil of the state.
And when you have, you know, not even because the state is this portion of a human being's mind mm-hmm. that makes you look at your neighbor and go, I deserve a car that good.
Mm-hmm.
That portion of your brain.
Or the other part that says, I distrust my neighbor, he wants my car.
Right. That portion of your brain is the state.
Yeah.
Those emotions mm-hmm. are what the foundation of the state is.
Illogical fear and envy of your neighbor's goods.
Right. And when you have people acting on those instincts, mm-hmm. they often follow a pattern.
Right. Exactly.
Because we're human beings and we fall into patterns. And so looking from outside of that, you say, well, all of these things follow the same exact pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's because humans do it.
Right.
Humans do it based off these exact fears.
There's something the creationists always refer to in their attack on evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, am I going to mess this up? Similar purpose or similar appearance.
Similar designs. Similar designer or something like that.
Doesn't mean similar ancestor.
Yeah.
So,
oh, okay.
So
yeah,
then,
that's a different one than I was thinking of.
So then if you look at a fish mm-hmm. and you look at a submarine, they didn't both evolve from an earlier fish.
Right.
You know, and yet they both function the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not taking one side or the other on
right.
that. That's not my
right.
point to pit evolutionists against creationists. But there's a valid point there in the sense that if you see a repetitious pattern,
mm-hmm.
it may or may not be because it's all a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
It could just as easily be that you're seeing a pattern that's typical
mm-hmm.
of the way humans behave.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as you allow that state part of your brain that you're talking about, as long as you harbor a place for the state to exist in your brain,
mm-hmm.
you're almost destined to behave in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
But if you reject the state in your brain, because mm-hmm. that's where we kill the state, we
mm-hmm.
kill the state in our own head.
Mm-hmm.
When we recognize what the state is and that it is an aspect
like
of our imagination.
Fight Club.
Yeah. Yes! Once you spot that Brad Pitt is you...
Don't shoot yourself in the face, though. You don't have to do that to get rid of the state.
But once you realize that the state exists...
Spoilers!
That will never be... But once you realize that the state exists in your mind,
mm-hmm.
then you can kill the state... in your mind,
mm-hmm.
and to you, the state is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is, other people still believe in the myth.
Right.
And we're stuck in a world where all these people are delusional and believe in this myth.
Right. But the way to kill it is not to threaten them with violence if they don't do what you want.
Or try to use your imaginary state
to
influence their imaginary state.
The way to kill it is to bring more people to the truth and to
right.
point out that they're using illogical fallacies
mm-hmm.
to prop up this idea of the state and
yeah.
that it's not based in reality. You know, I've had this conversation with so many people. Taxes are the one that, you know, the most logical minarchist person.
Mm-hmm.
I've had them go, oh, well, it's not fair that, you know, rich people pay less taxes. And you're like, no, stop it.
Yeah.
That is statist mentality. That
yeah.
is a statist way of thinking.
Yeah.
It is, it's not...
how much you pay.
It's not about paying that this person pays less taxes than you.
Yeah.
It's about the fact that robbery is immoral. Theft
right.
is immoral.
Right.
it doesn't matter who's getting robbed from. It doesn't matter who's being stolen from, or that they're not being stolen from as much as you.
Yeah.
It's immoral, all of it.
We must have an evil. We must have an equal distribution of theft.
We're an equal opportunity.
Yeah.
Thief.
Well, you know, I've said this before. When you're talking about taking something you believe in,
mm-hmm.
and something other people believe in, and replacing one set of beliefs with another set of beliefs,
mm-hmm.
If you think about somebody like, well, I was mentioning Zeus a minute ago, the Romans didn't get rid of the belief in Zeus by killing all the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was they brought in their belief in Jupiter,
mm-hmm.
and their belief in Jupiter was accepted, mm-hmm. rather than the Greeks' belief in Zeus.
Right.
And then along come the Christians, and the Christians did not attack and kill the Romans. They did not do that.
Right.
They did not stick a gun or a spear to the head of the Romans and say, become Christians.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was they presented a theology,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed more logical than this theology that the Romans had previously. And so everybody abandoned Jupiter. Now, it didn't happen immediately.
Right.
It wasn't like you walked in, it wasn't like Paul walked into Rome and held up a, you know, John 3:16 sign, and all of a sudden the Romans all went, they slapped themselves on the forehead and went, "Doh!" And they ran down and bought a Bible.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that's not how it happened.
And again, you know, the theology lingers,
mm-hmm.
you know. And because of the fact that the Roman Empire had already pretty much, the state had taken the place of the religion.
Right.
You know, it was no longer that you went and you worshipped Jupiter. It was you went and you worshipped The
representative of the state.
Right.
But, yeah.
Caesar.
Yeah. The emperor.
And so it is easier when you have a theology that's based in people.
Yeah.
To oust that,
mm-hmm.
and set up a new theology than it is if you're dealing with gods.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if the Roman emperor switches to Christianity,
yeah.
then your god has ordained that you yeah. should switch to this.
Yeah.
You know, and you already are in that sheep mode.
Yeah.
So it's a lot easier.
And so the dedication of the followers can be questioned a little bit, because
right.
really it was just what's politically expedient to worship Jupiter.
It was a lot harder to convert the people in Ireland and Scotland
yeah.
and,
yeah.
And the
Norway.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Because they didn't have that state mm-hmm. in place.
Yeah.
And
in some cases, not so much in Ireland, but in parts of Eastern Europe and parts of Scandinavia, the only way Christianity could be sold to them was not in an intellectual form,
mm-hmm.
but was by rounding up their leaders and executing them all, and then
mm-hmm.
placing new leaders there and demanding,
right.
You know, essentially installing a state or
mm-hmm.
installing a series of mini states throughout Eastern Europe,
yep.
destroying the non-state system that had existed prior to Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the, pagans, one of the great criticisms of Christianity was the way Christianity was spread in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It was not even the way Christianity was introduced into the New World. In the New World, you had one state coming
mm-hmm.
in, attacking another state, defeating it, and saying, okay, now here's the new religion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that it was brutal.
Right.
It was horrible. But in Eastern Europe, there was no state.
Right.
There was a series of clans and communities, and it was entirely not state.
Mm-hmm.
And the Christianity came in waves and literally rounded up and butchered anybody who was of any kind of leadership stature. And we should say that anarchists don't have a true anarcho-capitalists,
mm-hmm.
not those, you know, not the kids lighting dumpsters on fire, but
yeah.
true anarcho-capitalists. Don't have a problem with leadership.
No.
What we have a problem with is coercive leadership.
Right. And it's not even an issue with religion.
Mm-hmm.
Because much like corporations and much like, you know, all of the other things, mm-hmm. religion is a tool that the state will sometimes pick up
right.
and use mm-hmm. to enforce their ownership over the masses.
And when it does that, when the state picks up religion, it doesn't matter if the state is picking up Judaism mm-hmm. or if the state is picking up Islam or if the state is picking up some aspect of Christianity like the Roman Catholic or if it's picking up the Southern Baptists mm-hmm. or if it's picking up the United Methodist. It doesn't matter. The Puritans are a perfect example. Mm-hmm. I beat the Puritans whenever possible because they're the prime example of the state using religion and using the facade of religion mm-hmm. to install the state.
Yep.
And it becomes a matter of, well, you're going to go to hell if you're not doing this, if you're not dressing like this and speaking like this and tipping your hat like this mm-hmm. and behaving like this.
And when you remove the state from religion, those exact same beliefs mm-hmm. are suddenly fine.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to believe that you have to wear this special hat to get into mm-hmm. heaven or whatever, mm-hmm. that's
yeah.
great.
Yeah,
have
go
that.
For it.
You know,
as long as you're not using the force and the aggression of the state.
Right.
Or as long as you're not taxing me to pay for your hat.
Right. You know, there are some pretty goofy religions out there mm-hmm. that I have no issue with as long as...
Yeah.
You know, I'm not paying for you, and I'm not being forced to participate in your religion.
And really, from the state's point of view, a lot of people get wrapped up because, religion is evil because mm-hmm. of all this. Well, no, again, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You're seeing the evils of religion, not because religion is inherently evil. I'm sorry, Penn, you're wrong. But religion is not inherently evil. Mm-hmm. What becomes evil is when you start to use force and aggression to push this. Mm-hmm. And that always comes from the intermarriage between the state and religion.
Right.
And it's the same thing with corporate. We were talking about, before we started the podcast, we were talking about Walmart, you know. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a problem with Walmart. We don't have a problem with the CEO of Walmart making obscene amounts of money. We're perfectly comfortable with that.
Right.
Where the problem comes in is that Walmart utilizes the state to get its trading advantage and therefore pushing other people out of the market that
right.
would otherwise be competitors. So we don't know what Walmart would look like in a free market situation. Walmart might be big or it might not be big.
Right.
We don't know because Walmart and the state are married and they utilize the state to develop this virtual monopoly.
Yep.
So it's not how much the CEO makes or how much the door greeter makes or whether or not they get their stuff from China. None of that stuff matters. What matters is the gun that's stuck to your head that mm-hmm. provides the monopoly for Walmart to function like that.
Yep.
That's the problem. And who's holding the gun? Walmart's not holding the gun.
Right.
They don't have any armies. They don't have any police.
Right. You never hear about people being, you know, tased by a Walmart door greeter.
Oh.
You know. But, and, you know, when we're talking about that, because, you know, you can't... It's possible, in theory, for a big company to exist in a free market.
Yeah.
But, you know... Corporations are so unstable.
Yeah.
And they're always on the verge of just complete financial collapse.
They really are.
And the only way that they can manage to stay in business is by having the state prop them up.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if a company, I'm not going to use the word corporation because mm-hmm. then we immediately fall into what the state is providing the monopoly for.
Right.
But if a company can get big enough and they can continue to innovate and they can continue to keep their finger on the pulse of what the consumers want and they can continue to be price competitive with, you know, and they can continue to supply to the market, then they can get big.
Right.
But they can never take over as a monopoly without the force of government.
Right.
This has been shown, you know, Austrian economists have shown this over and over and over and over and over and over. A company in a free market situation can never become a monopoly without the force of government.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't happen. But the flaw in a big company, whether we're going to call it a corporation or anything else, is the bigger the company gets, the further the head of the company And that can be a person or numerous people. Mm-hmm. But the further they get detached away mm-hmm. from the actual market functions itself.
Right.
And the further the chain of command is moved away from the reward punishment aspects of the market.
It's the telephone game.
You know,
me as a retail, you know, associate standing in the store helping customers, I know immediately when the customers are upset mm-hmm. or angry.
Yeah.
You know, but in order to have anything change, I have to tell my boss, and they have to tell their boss, and they have to tell their boss, and mm-hmm. it has to go to a committee, and by yeah. the time it does that, and then comes all the way back down.
With some totally vanilla answer.
You've ended up, we put up a poster.
Yeah. Yeah, or we've got a new slogan.
Well, thanks. That helped.
Yeah.
You know.
Because they've washed it through so many different people and taken out the reward mm-hmm. punishment aspects that the market produces, and so there's no real answer.
Yeah.
Or somebody on the top end decides, oh, what we need to do is greet every new customer with this phrase.
Yeah.
That'll make our sales skyrocket. Yeah, no, what you need to do is improve your product, improve your service, be right. more competitive with your price. That's what drives the market, yeah. not your silly little phrase that you throw at people every single time they call or every time they come through your drive-thru or every yeah. time they walk up to your, you know, thank you for shopping at our Walmart or your Walmart. Thank you for shopping at your Walmart. My Walmart?
If it were my Walmart, you wouldn't be saying stuff like that.
Yeah.
You'd be saying, hello, sir, how can we help you? Let me carry you around in a golden litter.
Oh, well, have we done our duty for today?
I think so.
Okay, I think we're about to.
I don't know that we actually made any real points in any of this, yeah. but...
Well, we had fun. And besides that, can you hear the music starting?
No, we want to talk more. No.
BadQuaker.com, get over there. Give us an email, ben@badquaker.com. Or Kai@badquaker.com. Bye, folks.